Welcome to The Rich Life Show, the show designed to help you build long-term financial success, achieve peace of mind, and enjoy your life through community, family, and faith. Now, here's your host, Rich Life Advisor, Bo Henderson.
It's that time again. We're here on The Richest Hour on the radio, the one place that talks about your money and all aspects of true wealth, finances, relationships, health, faith, and a lot more. I'm Bo Henderson, Financial Advisor and Master Certified Success Coach. And you're listening to The Rich Life Show. And as we get started today, got a great show lined up today. Just want to say a special thanks to our sponsors, Peach State Bank, Bank and Trust, American Family Insurance, and We Clean Cleaners. All these businesses, I'm very particular about the businesses we align with, and these are all businesses that get that you are the asset, and that's how they treat their customers. They give back in the community, so just thank you guys. I'm going to be answering money questions today and talking to Bob Berg, best-selling author of the business classic, Endless Referrals, and more recently, The Go-Giver. Always have a great conversation with Bob. You don't want to miss that. But before we do that, I want to throw out a question for you, and I think you probably know what the question is what is it, what's going on in your life now that makes your life rich? What is it that you're thankful for? We talk about this most every week, and the reason we do is there's so many things going on out there, and I think our tendency is to focus on the things that aren't going right, that we don't like, and if we're not careful, we can get in this pattern of blaming and complaining. And guess what? What we focus on, where we put our attention and energy, it expands. Or you create more of what you think about. So why in the world will we not focus on the things that are going good? So that's my question today, is what's going in your life right now that makes your life rich? Is it family, friends, work, things going on at church? There's always something to be thankful for. So don't keep it a secret. Share with us. When you do, it blesses us here at the studio. It always blesses our listeners. And it just means so much when you share because it blesses you too. So give us a call right here at 770-535-2911, 1-800-552-9386. And when we go to this topic, we're going to talk about the art of persuasion here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, there's lots of ways to share and connect with us, whether you want to post online on our panel here. So give us a call here in the studio. Financial questions, you can always ask your questions or leave them for me at askbo.com. That's askbeau.com. Askbo.com. Rich Life Advisors on Facebook or at Rich Life Advisor on Twitter. So the big question, what is it that makes your life rich? Jen put on Facebook, I'm learning and growing every day. Would I sometimes endure for that? Well, it's not always easy. However, learning and wisdom are priceless. Lord, help me stay teachable and hungry. So Jen, I like that. I can't think of anything better to pursue than wisdom. So appreciate the share there. Rose wrote in, working closely with my clients and seeing their business moving forward makes my life rich. It's such a blessing to me and them. Again, Rose, I think you get it, and it's going to fit right in with our conversation today. You're adding value, and by giving, you're receiving, and everybody's life is a little richer all the way around. And you never know what somebody will write in about their rich life. So Joshua wrote in, the University of Georgia, averaging 47.5 points and 520 yards per game. That's what makes his life rich. So you never know what it's going to be. So if you have something you'd like to share, again, let us know right here, 770-535-2911. 1-800-552-9386. And let's go ahead and go. Let's get into this conversation because there's a lot I want to talk about with our guest today. Bob Berg's a speaker, best-selling author of the business classic, Endless Referrals, and more recently, the business parable, The Go-Giver, which really has taken off the last couple years and gained a huge tribe. And Bob, I don't know if you realize this or not, but Endless Referrals, that book, you were actually my mentor for many years with networking. So I just wanted to let you know that's the cool thing about writing a book like that is I consider you a mentor of mine, and it's great we met and become friends and get to talk about this stuff. And one of the things I love about Bob is he's an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money a person can make is proportional to how many people they serve and how much value they put out there. That's different from some of the messages we hear today, you know? But guess what? It works. So great to have you with us, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Bo. It's always great to be with you. Thank you for that very nice introduction. I appreciate that a lot, those kind words.
Oh, well, it's so good to have you on. Every time you're on, you share so much value that everybody gets a lot from the show.
Thank you.
Well, so if people have questions for Bob, we're going to talk about, I don't think anything's off limits, right, Bob?
Nothing is off limits, Bo.
Okay, so if you have questions for Bob or just want to share what makes your life rich, and let's start with that, Bob. Are you ready for that? What makes your life rich?
What makes my life rich? Well, the sages asked a question. They said, who is a rich person? And they answered, that person who rejoices in their lot, which means basically it comes down to gratitude. When you have gratitude for what you have, you're by the very definition of the thing, you're rich. Now, you know, does it include money? Certainly. Money is a very important aspect. Fortunately, there are great coaches and advisors like you who teach us how to manage our money, grow our money, and that's very important. You know, money, as I said, money is not everything, but I think it was Zig Ziglar who so expertly said, money may not be everything, but sometimes, but it ranks right up there with oxygen.
Right.
And so, and that's true. Now, those different types of riches, of wealth. There's financial, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, social, and probably a thousand others that I can't even think of, but it really comes down to, do you rejoice in what you have? Are you grateful for it? Now, and here's the thing. Having gratitude for what you have doesn't mean you've got to settle for a little. There's no reason for that. We can continue to grow. We can continue to increase both our wealth, our wisdom, our knowledge, our friendships, our what have you. But it means that wherever you are, you certainly are grateful for what you have. And I think that really encapsulates rich.
Well, you know, and that's in the work I've done over the years, there's nothing worse than seeing somebody hit every financial goal they've ever set and end up losing all the important things in the process and being miserable. But you're right. It's a balance there. So you can live rich in a lot of different ways. And I appreciate that. So if we shift on to, well, and, you know, Bob, what it makes me think of is kind of the timeless principle of stewardship. When we're talking about this gratitude, why in the world would we be entrusted with more money, more relationships, more clients, if we don't take care of what we have right in front of us?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And it tends to be that when we appreciate what we have, we're going to take better care of it. We're going to be a better steward of what we have, and we're going to be able to really build on that. You know, it's almost like almost like God says, okay, you appreciate this, I'm going to give you more to appreciate.
That's
it. Kind of works out well.
You know, a couple of examples that come up that I think are fun are, one is a client asked me what my thoughts about getting their 16-year-old a car. And I said, well, can you tell me how good did they take care of their bicycle? And it made them stop and think for a minute. You know, another example was when I'm training some of these advisors, when I'm working with somebody to work with big clients that have big things going on and large assets, the biggest measure I can really look at, it's not what they say, it's not necessarily titles or anything, it's how they take care of the smaller clients. How are they stewarding that? So,
exactly. Well, I love what T. Harv Eker says in his book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. There's sort of a consistent theme that goes through it, and it's how you do anything is how you do everything.
Great. Yeah, that's a great concept.
Yeah.
We got to show
up. Why is, you know, and, you know, financial planning, as you teach, you know, begin your plan before you're making a lot of money.
That's right. Yeah.
Make sure you're putting your 10% or whatever it happens to be in this account and that account. You're giving 10% to charity. You're taking 10% doing, you know, having fun. You're doing whatever it is you need to do. But begin, you know, it's easier to do that when you're making a dollar than it is $1 million, you know, starting out small.
Getting the habit. You're right.
Getting the habits, exactly.
You know, something that's come up over and over again is that when you have a lot of money or when it comes in, especially if it comes in all at once or fast, it just makes you more of what you already are in a lot of cases.
Exactly.
So we have that conversation too. Is money good or bad? I thought, you know, it's really the context of the person.
Right. And it just is. It's just energy. It's a means of exchange. Unfortunately, we get so many lack messages through society that taken in from just a, you know, from, well, I guess a combination when you think of it, all our belief systems, all the messages we take in, it's a combination of family, environment, schooling, the news, you know, television shows, movies, where there's so much lack programming. If you look at any movie, any really big movie, movie, a big selling movie, you'll always see there are basically two types of people that are portrayed. There are the good people who are usually portrayed as poor, but happy, right? They're always poor, but happy. And they're, oh, the other character is the, you know, they're always taken advantage of, put down, stepped over by who? The rich people who are portrayed as mean and nasty and cowardly and they have no soul. And so what happens is people who watch these and who get hit with these messages before their belief or as their belief systems are being formed, they take in these messages unthinkingly. So what happens is people grow up with a very unhealthy relationship with money. And the tough part of this, Bo, is that it's unconscious. They don't even realize it.
You know, you bring up a great point, a question that came in last week that a lady had a belief that went back to childhood. and the belief made perfect sense in the context that her grandmother taught it to her when she was a young girl. But she generalized it to, excuse me, she generalized it to basically the belief was it's bad to spend money on myself. So mm-hmm. when I get in sales situations when other women are spending money on themselves, I get anxious. And we took that back to her grandmother teaching her that. But her grandmother grew up in an area where there wasn't enough money to feed the kids. So her spending money on herself was, of course, not good. But for this belief, it did not serve this lady in today when she was generalizing that same belief to situations that were completely different.
Right, exactly.
Well, very good, Bob. Well, we're already time for a break, and we haven't even started on our topic yet. So when we come back, we'll talk about persuasion. We're here with Bob Berg, having a great conversation. Love to hear what it is that makes your life rich. And if you have any questions for us, let us know. We'll be right back on the Rich Life Show. We went to the break. We were talking to speaker and best-selling author Bob Berg. And Bob, the conversation we keyed up, we had a great conversation, I thought, at the end of that last segment. But we were going to talk today about persuasion. And I know you have a book, a great book I've been reading this week, The Art of Persuasion, Winning Without Intimidation. And I know that's through Sound Wisdom Publishing, and just really haven't been enjoying that book.
Oh, thank you.
But tell our listeners, what's important about persuasion?
Well, persuasion allows you to help other people and yourself. In a sense, it's a cousin of influence. I define influence as simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. And when done with win-win purposes, it helps both people increase and expand their lives.
Well, that brings up a good point. I think sometimes around persuasion, there might be, we were talking about context earlier, there might be a little bit of a negative context, and it might more be leaning towards people defining it more like manipulation. What's the difference there?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Bo, and I'm often asked to define that difference. In fact, it usually tends to take the form of a challenge, as in, Bob, isn't persuasion and manipulation the same thing? And, you know, Bo, it's a good question. It's a legitimate question. After all, in both cases, you're attempting to elicit an individual or a group to think or do something they would maybe not think or do without your influence. And you know what? The two of them, persuasion and manipulations, are cousins. Now, one's the good cousin and one's the evil cousin, but they are cousins. And to deny that's to deny reality. I mean, both are based on certain principles of human action and interaction. And you know, good persuaders and good manipulators, they understand those principles and they know how to effectively utilize them, which is one reason I say there's perhaps nothing more dangerous than a bad person with good people skills. So, you know, the principles are similar, sometimes even the same. The results are as different as night and day. The big difference, in my opinion, is intent. And, you know, I, for a long time, and, you know, this book that you're talking about is a sort of a rewrite and a little bit more of a modernization of a book I wrote years ago, and the good people at Sound Wisdom did a terrific job of helping me to update it. And But back when I first wrote it and began speaking on this topic, when I'd be asked the difference between persuasion and manipulation, I never really felt I defined it correctly in a way that it was really understandable. And as the saying goes, which I believe, if you can't define something, you really don't understand it totally. So I sort of searched for the best explanations I could find. And there was a book I read in the 90s. It was actually written in the late 80s called The Art of Talking So That People Will Listen by Dr. Paul Sweats. And actually, the book is more about listening than it is talking. But I thought Dr. Sweats provided an outstanding explanation regarding the difference between persuasion and manipulation. And here's what he said, and I'm quoting from him, and I quote this at just about every program I do on this topic. Manipulation aims at control, not cooperation. It results in a win-lose situation. It does not consider the good of the other party. Now, persuasion is just the opposite. In contrast to the manipulator, the persuader seeks to enhance the self-esteem of the other party. The result is that people respond better because they're treated as responsible or response-able, self-directing individuals. So, really, Bo, persuasion aims to serve, manipulation to hurt. Or you know what? Let me kind of rephrase that. If not necessarily intending to hurt, certainly not caring if it does. The manipulator's just so focused on himself or herself and their own self-interests that they do only what they feel is for their own benefit. And if someone has to suffer as a result, then so be it. What they don't realize is that not only is this not good life practice, it's not good business practice. I mean, think about it. A manipulator can have employees but never a team. A manipulator can have customers, certainly, but usually not repeat customers and not referral-based customers. The manipulator can have friends and family, certainly, but very rarely fulfilling relationships. So, you know, both persuaders and manipulators, they know the how and why of human motivation. They're both going to utilize their knowledge to cause the action they desire a person to take. But the big difference, the crucial difference, is that while manipulators use their knowledge to their advantage only, the persuader uses it to the other person's advantage as well.
Well,
and you know, this ties in, and I'm apologize, didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say this ties into law number three of the Go-Giver, which says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first.
Well, and I was trying to get my head around that as you were explaining the definition of, okay, how does the persuadee or the person you're persuading benefit? And I was thinking of an example. So if I'm talking to you, Bob, about your financial portfolio, and I'm trying to persuade you to make some changes, if I'm trying to do that in a deal that improves your position and it's in your best interest, then everybody wins.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. I mean, you know, ultimately we have to respect another person and their individuality to go with what they choose. But persuasion means that we're going to, based on asking the right questions, based on really understanding them and their needs, their wants, their desires, it's taking the conversation in that direction. But that's also why it's so important to focus on the other person and adding value to them. In the Go-Giver, John and I say that money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means the value must come first. The money or the commission or the fee is simply a direct and natural result of the value you provide. Persuasion is all about understanding. And Dale Carnegie said it best in his classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People. He said, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not your reason.
That's right. More with Bob Berg when we come back. We're going to talk about some of these techniques and examples of persuasion, Bob, to give some practical how-tos on the Rich Life Show.
Welcome to the Rich Life Show, the show designed to help you build long-term financial success, achieve peace of mind, and enjoy your life through community, family, and faith. Now, here's your host, Rich Life Advisor, Bo Henderson.
Welcome back to the Rich Life Show. We've been having a fascinating conversation about the art of persuasion with speaker, best-selling author, and I'm going to add on their mentor, if that's okay with him, Mr. Bob Berg. And if you would like a copy of this book, it's on my recommended. It's the Rich Life Reading, recommended reading. The Art of Persuasion, Winning Without Intimidation. You can find that at TremendousBooks.com. That's TremendousBooks.com. And to find out more of all the great things Bob has going on and his materials, you can go to Berg. That's B-U-R-G.com, Berg.com. So, Bob, we went to the break, and we really keyed up this idea of persuasion and the positive effects of persuasion. Can we give some examples? Because I can see this actually pervading every area of our life.
Well, you know, let's take one area that's not business, just something every day. And let's take an incident and look at why it happened. I think back to a time a few years ago. I was pulling into the parking lot, into a parking space at a hotel. I had a meeting there. And as I was pulling into the space, I was not as careful as I should have been. I was probably thinking more about the meeting than the driving, which is never a good idea. And as I pulled into the space, I almost clipped a guy who was getting out of his car on the driver's side. And as soon as this happened, you know, he shot me a nasty, just hateful look. You know, who could blame him? I mean, you know, he had a combination of fear and rage and so forth. He'd almost been hit by somebody who obviously wasn't looking where he was going. So
I thought you were going to say he shot you something else, but good.
Okay. No, because this is a G-rated show.
Okay, oh, yes. Very good.
So what happened was, what I did is I paused for a moment, and then I just put a very genuine, apologetic smile on my face, but a smile, a non-defensive smile. I held up my hand in sort of a wave, and through the windshield, I mouthed the words, "Sorry." And so I smiled, held my hand up in a sort of a sign of peace as though acknowledging it was my fault and said, "Sorry." Well, immediately he went, "That's okay." Now, think about this. Here's an example of something that could have turned into a horrible situation, right? I mean, he had that that nasty look, as the looks if looks could kill. And if I had reacted to that, I could have shot back another look of my own, and he would have said something, and I would have said something. And, you know, what do you think road rage is, you know, when you see these kind of things happening? It's two people totally not in control of their own emotions. But instead, that's not how it worked out. Now, here's the funny thing. After that exchange, he walked into the hotel, and I was still getting some stuff together in the car before my meeting. So I walked through the parking lot, go in the door. I really didn't expect to see him again, and he was in the hallway talking to some other people. He must have had a meeting of his own there. And so as I was walking in his direction, I was about to, you know, again say to him, "I'm really sorry. I should have been more careful. I should have been looking where I was going." Before I could even say anything to him, though, he said, "Hey, I'm really sorry. I should have been more careful getting out of the car." Now, again, you think, how did something that could have been so ugly turn into, you know, an exchange between new friends? And let me give you my explanation of this, Bo. It's all in the frame. It's all in setting the proper frame. What is a frame? A frame is basically a premise. It's the foundation. It's the beginning of a transaction. It's the starting point from which everything else will evolve. Now, what happened was he had a frame, which was an anger frame, again, based on fear of almost being hit, but it was an anger frame. Now, had I accepted that frame and did the same, and that's what usually happens. People usually are reactionary. They react to a frame set by someone else. Had I done that, that could have then spiraled. But instead, what I did is I reset his frame. First, it was important. It was vital that I was in control of myself. The sages asked, "Who is a mighty person?" And they answered, "That person who can control their own emotions and make of a potential enemy a friend." And that's what I was able to do. So in controlling my response, I was able to reset his frame into one of friendship as opposed to anger and hate. That's persuasion. That's what it's all about. It's win-win in nature.
Well, no, that's a great example. And let me know if I'm saying this right, but in that moment, you chose to respond to the situation at hand instead of just how it felt and react.
Right. I learned that from Zig Ziglar, a hero of both of ours, I'm sure. And it was, gosh, probably 25, 30 years ago, I remember him talking about that, saying that when we react, we're letting other people or situations control us. When we respond, we're in control of the situation. We're in control of ourselves. As my dad always says, it's a matter of being the boss of yourself. You know, it's being in control of your emotions rather than letting your emotions control you. And only when you operate out of that are you able to then be part of the solution rather than part of the problem.
And yeah, and that's the power of you actually taking control of the situation by choosing to have a choice there.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Well, Bob, we're going to go to a break here in just a second, really. But do you want to tease a technique or two that we'll talk about when we come back from this next break?
Yeah, we'll talk about the setting the frame of agreement and utilizing the 8 key words that will practically always move a person to your side of the issue.
All right, we set the context of persuasion, talking with always such a valuable guest, Bob Berg, and we're going to give you some techniques when we come back. How do you become a better persuader to attract, to bring what you want in your life? When we come back right here on The Rich Life Show. Look at that. Oz behind the curtain bringing us back with Crystal Blue Persuasion. How appropriate for the show today. That away, Oz. So we went to the break, and we've been talking with Bob Berg about the art of persuasion and how valuable it is and what a skill it is to be able to create these win-win relationships and scenarios in your life to achieve what you want by helping other people get what they want. So, Bob, I think we've really set it up well. So what are some techniques we can do to get better at this? Is this a skill somebody can actually learn, or are you just born with it?
Oh, no, it's absolutely a skill that that people can learn. You know, I think like anything else, people are predisposed in certain ways. You know, it's like the person who has great natural talents as a baseball player. They're in a great position in which if they continue to work hard, they're going to, you know, be even better. But anyone can learn how to be a great influencer and a great persuader. Let's talk just about a couple of quick thoughts, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time.
Sure.
So what about persuading someone to your point of view who may not be predisposed to doing so? You can do that, but it's not going to happen by way of arguing. Again, let's go back to Dale Carnegie. He said that you can't win an argument, because even when you win, you lose, because the person's ego simply isn't going to allow themselves to be overcome by someone, especially someone telling them they're wrong. So the first thing you want to do, if you want to end that argument so that you're reframing to coming from a place of agreement, is to agree with the person. Now, don't get me wrong, you don't have to sell out to do this, nothing like that. However, there's always something within what they say where you can find agreement, even if it's just how they feel or their right to have those feelings. Let me give you an example. You arrive at the hotel much earlier than the usual check-in time. The person at the front desk tells you, well, it's against a company policy for guests to check in before the regular time of 3 o'clock. Now, you could logically argue that as long as the room's been cleaned, it shouldn't be any big deal, right? And you'd be right, but that would cause the employee to admit he's wrong. And most people, again, they have an ego, and they don't enjoy that feeling. So instead, agree with them. Oh, yes, I understand what you mean. It's hotel policy, and that needs to be respected. I can appreciate that. So first of all, you didn't argue with him. You agreed with him. I don't imagine he's going to now say, well, no, you're wrong. I'm totally wrong. he's gonna feel good that you agreed with him, and he's gonna relax because now he knows you're not being confrontational. You're not looking to overcome him. You're not looking to win and make him wrong. But now you can help him to live in the solution and you with the suggestion. You know, I'm wondering, just if it's not too much trouble, could you check to see if perhaps one of the rooms has already been cleaned? I think that's probably the reason for the rule, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, so now you've reframed it. You've given him the solution to what he can do. And as he's checking, I'm going to suggest that you use what I call the 8 key words. And these words are, if you can't do it, I'll definitely understand. If you can't do it, I'll definitely understand. Now, what are you doing when you use those words? You're showing respect for him, okay? You're also placing his value above the transaction. You're really, you know, you've given him the solution, so you know he can do it, and he knows he can do it, and he knows that you know he can do it. But you're also kind of letting him know that if for some reason you really can't, you know, it's okay. I respect you, and I value you more than just getting what I want. But now, here's also the key. You've given this person what's called the out or the back door. Rather than have him feel cornered, you're giving him sort of an emotional escape hatch. This is what I call Berg's Law of the Out or Back Door, and it basically says the bigger the out or back door you give someone to take, the less they'll feel the need to take it. That's just human nature. When we feel cornered in, that's when we feel we have to escape. When we're simply given the out or back door, we don't feel the need to take it. So you're giving this person the back door, you're giving this person the out, not so that they'll take it, but so they feel comfortable enough with you that they don't have to take it.
Yeah, and that goes back into that whole scenario it's one of the techniques, actually, that you give. It's you give them the room to be able to trust you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
All right, Bob, we just got maybe about a minute. So tell our listeners, so great key, and as always, when we talk, there's so much value in it, and every question and everything we talk about, we get to about a tenth of what we really would like to. And I would love to have you back. I mean, very powerful, the art of persuasion and the things you shared with us today. But I'd love to have you back in the next few weeks to share something that I think's amazingly powerful, and that's the Go-Giver mission that you have.
Oh, I'd love that.
Okay.
I'd love that.
Well, very good. We'll remind our listeners again, if they need to get in touch with you, again, you can get the book, The Art of Persuasion, Winning Without Intimidation by Bob Berg at TremendousBooks.com.
Yeah, actually, Bo, it's Tremendous Life Books.
Tremendous
Life
Books.
I think I told you wrong earlier, and I apologize. It's Tremendous Life Books.
TremendousLifeBooks.com.
You can do a search on that site.
And I believe you can search it on Amazon, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And my site is, my personal site's www.burg.com. And while you're there, you can download Chapter 1 of The Go-Giver of Endless Referrals and some of my other books. You can check out my blog and connect with me on social media right through that homepage.
I appreciate it so much, Bob. Always so much value you bring to the show and to our listeners. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to deem you officially one of our Rich Life mentors for the value.
All right.
Well,
I'm honored. Thank you.
Yes. The value you brought to my life and like I said, the networking with Endless Referrals, the Go-Giver. And again, this week, reading The Art of Persuasion, just another level there. So thank you so much, Bob. Look forward to talking to
pleasure.
You again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. We have a couple of financial questions when we come back. Had a great conversation with Bob Berg about The Art of Persuasion. We'll be right back on The Rich Life Show. We had a great conversation and great shares of people that wrote in and shared what it was that made their life rich. And I appreciate that so much because, again, when you share and we can share, I always get emails. People come in throughout the next week to the office and they tell me how much it meant to hear other people out there either going through something they are going through something they've been through. And it's such a blessing. So, again, thank you for sharing that. And just a big thank you to Bob Berg and him spending time with us on this concept of how to win to persuade people to these scenarios and these situations to where it's a win for everybody involved. Because there's a lot of that going on out there to where it's a win for somebody, but a lose for the other person. But here's the deal, guys, is the people that are able to, you know, we talk about our local businesses and businesses in general, the people that are able to create enough value and continue to give value and have successful businesses, those are the businesses that are sustained. And you'll hear down the road, they've lasted 50, 60 years because they created value in people's lives as opposed to a transaction to make a sale and then move forward. So appreciate everything you do. Again, one of the things that really makes my life rich is our listeners. I've had great feedback today. This week and have people share with me, what they get from the show and that they really love the positive, spin we put on things. And that's really important to me. If we can talk about that for just a second, it's we want to be real, and we want to take things. Life can be tough. We can go through some tough things, and we can go through some hard things. But what do we do with that? You know, we can let it define us. We can let it kind of beat us up, and we can carry it with us for years and years. Or we can look at it and say, what did I learn here? What's the lesson in this? Because there's probably a lesson here that if I learn it, I can move forward to the next step of my, what I call my life school, in the curriculum of what really I'm put on this earth here to do. So appreciate it. Appreciate everybody, and appreciate your shares. Appreciate those of you that contact me, email, phone, and stop by the office, whether it's talking about financial planning or you're just talking about your life. That's why I do what I do. And I love that. So, had a question. Let me get to a real quick financial question. And before we run out of time, had somebody write in. This was George. George wrote in, Bo, I'm making no money on my retirement savings and CDs. When are the interest rates expected to rise? So, George, good question. And it's one we hear every week, and it's a frustration we hear every week. So we talked last week on the show about when the Fed released QE3, Quantitative Easing 3, and they're going to be pumping $40 billion of bonds into the market to keep interest rates low and stimulate spending. The downside of them trying to stimulate the spending is that it's going to suppress the interest rates, and they are planning on interest rates not rising or keeping interest rates low till at least mid-2015. What's that mean? That means the frustration we're seeing in savings accounts, money markets, CDs with these low rates, don't expect that to change for at least another 3 years or so. And what you need to do, meet with an advisor, get really clear on your objectives and goals, and see if there's some alternatives that meet those objectives and goals. Again, if you'd like to meet with our group, richlifefinancial.com, 770-249-7424. And thank you all. Can't wait to be back next week with you on the Rich Life Show.